What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Super Otaku Show. As always, I am joined by the Shooting Star Sheriff himself. How you doing, Sharif?
You already know the vibes, man. The Shooting Star Sheriff's here. But no, I'm doing good this week. How you guys doing?
I am good, and I am also joined by my Roman half, Aaron. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. What's good, guys?
I'm doing good, and of course, I am Bear of Roman Bear, and we're here this week with our mid-season spring anime review. We're going to be getting to that in just a little bit. And because we're doing anime reviews, and it's mostly stuff that we've been watching, we're going to skip our what have you guys been watching? I'm just going to see, is everybody good? Did everybody survive the week?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Barely.
Oh, man. Did you guys also have, like, slightly weird weeks?
Yes, I guess. I don't know. It's our, I don't know. What is time?
I mean, I will say that my week has been my week has been kind of on the weird side. But as far as my Gundaming, I'm almost done with my planet system from Gundam Buildivers Re:Rise. I literally have the last kit sitting behind me, the eighth kit. So I've been cracking these suckers out for a while. I finish, I'll post a picture in the chat so you guys can see all my hard plastic cutting work.
That's awesome. I'll try to remember to tweet those out so you guys can see all the Sharif's cool Gunpla.
Do you like order them online or do you go to like a hobby store?
So it's actually a combination of both. So a lot of the Gunpla kits that I buy, I do buy offline. But then for like supplies and stuff, like, let me just reach over. Like I have like Gundam markers and paint markers and paints and stuff. I can get those from a hobby shop that's like literally right around the corner from my house. So it's a combination.
Like, it seems weird to me because when I was growing up in Japan, like the hobby shops were basically Gundam kit stores. Like, an entire basically an entire two-story store, just boxes packed up to the ceilings of Gundam models. It's like and other models, of course, as well, but like mostly Gundam models.
They're crazy. There's also like Kamen Rider kits and like I have dibbled and dabbled into like there's Pokemon model kits. You can really find a model kit of anything nowadays. Like now,
it's good stuff.
Yeah, and they have tons of like weird crossover kits all the time now too.
Pokemon Gundam.
Yep, I do want to say since we talked about that the cool Digimon like fitness tracker a few weeks ago, I keep getting nothing but Facebook ads for the cards that go with it, which is super rude because like you can't buy the fitness tracker, it's sold out.
How dare they?
Yeah, it's sold out, you can't find it anywhere, and like people are still waiting for Digimon Survive to come out too, so it's like ugh.
Yep. Real quick, before we get into the news, I just want to give a shout out to a kind of funny best friend who helped me with a whole bunch of audio stuff for us. Gave me a very nice fellow named Patrick who listened to a couple of our shows and gave me a big breakdown on how everybody's audio sounds and made some suggestions, so I'm implementing some of them today. So hopefully
thank God. I listened to the last episode and it was bad. It was like atrocious. I couldn't hear anything. It was really bad.
See, Aaron is mean and overly judgy, so I'm gonna ignore
this. I'm not overly, I promise you. Like, I listen to a podcast, like I listen to like a lower grade podcast, like somebody else who's just kind of starting out, and I was like, okay. And I switched over to our podcast with like the same volume settings, and I was like, what did he say? What did he say?
Yeah, so everybody should sound a little louder, a little clearer. I know apparently one of the biggest issues was me, because I'm always so paranoid that I'm the loudest one out of all of us, just naturally. But I turn myself down the most.
At the beginning, I let you know that like your volume was louder than ours, but somehow I think we all got like turned down.
Yep, but we kind of have it fixed now, maybe. I don't know. We're going to work with audio quality as we go. Anyway, We're going to jump into the news for the week. We're going to kind of move through these quickly because I don't know how long our review is going to be. We have six anime on the docket.
So many anime.
And we're going to be playing around with the review format. This is our first time doing this, so we're kind of calling audibles. I have an idea of how it'll work, but we're going to be calling audibles here. So first things first, the sad news from the week is that composer Shunsuke Kikuchi, most famous for the Dragon Ball score, and he did a ton of other stuff. He did Kamen Rider, Doraemon, just like way more stuff than I realized Kikuchi did, passed away this week at 89. It is sad to see him go, but I mean, the dude left behind a fantastic legacy of really amazing music. I mean, he scored every epic moment of basically our childhood because he did Dragon Ball.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely going to be one of those things where it's like the music, and it's funny too because when it comes to music and a lot of different things, even in like, you know, movies or television, music is always kind of the unsung hero, ironically. Definitely his music will like go down as like a legacy, test of time. So
no doubt, man. So we're gonna, like I said, we're gonna kind of fly through these. Netflix has announced that they're going to be streaming the Sailor Moon Eternal movie on June 3rd.
Oh, hell yeah.
In the States.
I
was told that it is the Pegasus arc. I don't know if that's true or if that means anything to you guys, but I guess it's a good one. So, more stuff.
It looked good. I was watching the trailer. It looks pretty dope.
It is very pretty. There's part of me that has been... considering going and watching the new Sailor Moon. I think it's Sailor Moon Crystal is the remake.
Watched a bit of it, and like, I don't know. We watched that one, and then she went back and watched the like OG Sailor Moon. And I'll be honest, I like the OG more. Like, I like the really hand drawn, gritty. I don't know. It's more emotive. I feel it's a little more janky, but that it kind of gives it a certain charm to it.
I wonder if it's also because of the mangaka's style fits better in the old school. Like, she is a very unique old school shoujo manga artist, and like,
yeah,
it's always weird watching them be modernized. And I've got some points to mention in that when we get into our reviews of one of the shows we have. So there's that. Another Netflix thing that I just found really weird. Netflix now has a VTuber as their ambassador for anime called Enko Mei Corono. I just thought that was weird. She's like a sheep girl.
Okay. When are we getting Odd Taxi on Netflix then? Like,
I don't know. I want to know when Aaron's going to learn to program and make us a VTuber.
It's just gonna be a pair of boobs, like if we're being a talking pair of boobs. Like, it's gonna be a comment on fan service-y, and it's just gonna be that, but like the ultimate.
Like the mayor's assistant, Miss Bellum, in Powerpuff Girls, where it's
where you
just
never
like,
see her face.
Yeah, it's just like it's just a bust shot.
And God, that show had so many sex jokes. Oh my God, like. Holy, do you remember there's a villain named Sedusa?
No.
I don't remember that.
She comes in and like it falls like makes the professor fall in love with her, but she's got like Medusa hair. Like, you don't remember the Medusa hair lady? Name was Sedusa.
Oh, I remember her now. I know exactly who you're talking. Okay. I remember.
I'm gonna Google
this later. She wasn't in a lot of episodes though.
No, I only remember her from her intro episode. I don't know if she's a heavily recurring villain. I do know she comes back maybe once or twice more, but she's in the opening credits as well. So like, she's, you know, it's not like she's hidden.
Got you. I don't
remember. So the other couple things, we got two more news stories. The next one is that while I've never read the series, I have heard a bunch about it. The Ero Manga Sensei manga is ending on May 27th. It's always sad when you hear like popular shows ending, but it is coming to a natural conclusion from what I understand. So, grats to the mangaka of that one. You made it to the finish line. And I guess all the great shows, like everything's ending on all these magazines in over the last year. Only One Piece will outlive us.
I hope not, bro. I want to see the ending.
Well, we're that would be great. Arc, so it's only 500 chapters more.
and then a movie that takes 20 years to produce.
Yes, where Oda himself will hand draw every cell.
Jeez.
So finally, this is something I find very cool. The director of One Punch Man, Shingo Natsume, seems to be up to his old tricks again. If anybody doesn't know, part of the reason that One Punch Man Season 1 is an absolute, like, smashing success is because it is not a real Singular Studios anime. It is a weird dream team put together by the director and the producers by borrowing some of the top talent from a whole bunch of other studios, bringing in the Madhouse as contractors, and making something wild.
Yeah.
And this time, instead of adapting another manga, they are making a completely original series. It is a science fiction series called Sunny Boy, about 36 individuals who are suddenly teleported from their home and the normal world onto an island where they have to go to school and figure out what's going on. So kind of like a high school Lost thing, but they're bringing back a lot of kind of top talent from like One Punch Man and other shows, and it looks like Madhouse is trying to strike like catch lightning in a bottle a second time around with like just pulling people and doing cool shit.
I mean, that's one of the interesting things about anime is that like usually the quality of the animation isn't dependent on the studio necessarily, but rather the specific directors or animation directors they pull in or animators. Like it's hardly ever consistent, because like you'll get shows that can look like ass 1 second and then absolutely high octane beautiful action scenes the next, and you're like, what's going on?
I would say like there are studios that are known for like generally like more quality or consistency.
Yeah, like Studio Trigger and
like Madhouse. I'm trying to make a lot of really nice stuff.
Madhouse.
But yeah, like in general, it's the people behind it, and when you do what Madhouse is doing and you start pulling the best from wherever,
yeah,
do some crazy stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm not gonna delay with any more anime news.
I got anime news.
Why? We're trying to move fast. You didn't tell me.
I got one thing.
Get one.
Yasuke is on Netflix.
That's not news. Everyone who has Netflix can see it. As soon as you log in, it's on the big fuck
I'm so fucking hype. I did not know this show was coming. Like, I hadn't heard about it at all. And then it just kind of popped up. And I was like, okay. I was like, because I know who the figure is. It's a real historical figure that they've just made a fictional universe around.
Taylor is asking, "What is Yasuke?" So,
oh my God, so, yes. Can I take this?
Do you actually know what it's about? Did you watch any of the trailers, or have you just seen the poster?
Yeah, I watched the trailers.
Okay, because I didn't watch any of the trailers, and I thought it was purely a historical take, and it's not.
No. It is a how do I describe this? A historical fiction. Yeah. So it revolves around the central character Yasuke, who, if you did not know, is an actual historical figure. He's the only black samurai to have lived in Japan. He came to Japan as a slave, and he became a samurai, which on its own is a fucking cool-ass tale, and there's not enough written about him. I was kind of wondering how long it would take to get, like, a fictional, like, story based on this historical figure. Like, I honestly expected Tarantino to make a movie about this guy long before Studio MAPPA came in did a anime based off this character. And so from what I understand, it's kind of weird. I don't necessarily know the exact story, but basic premise is the same of this historical figure comes over as a slave, becomes a samurai. But then there's a bunch of magical elements in it now. And mechs and crazy mech samurai suits and stuff like that. And it's, you know, it just looks like a fun time. And Lakeith Stanfield is the voice actor for Yasuke, which is fucking cool as shit. I
might have to watch this.
I was like, oh shit, Lakeith Stanfield in an anime? That's cool.
I'm in this. Maybe we'll go do a Yasuke in review or something at some point. I'm lukewarm on it so far. I'm about 4 or 5 episodes in. So, but we'll go in on that another day. So it's on Netflix. So if you have Netflix, it's probably the thing that's number one after Shadow and Bone right now. It's just those two. That's all Netflix wants me to watch. Anyway, guys, with that, we're about to jump into our spring anime and review. Now, if you didn't catch the first episode of this series we did earlier at the beginning of spring, we looked at a whole bunch of anime that are coming out this spring and picked the ones that we all had to watch. We each picked two and built out a list, and we each had to watch at least the first two episodes of the series so that we can get together today and discuss them in this round table. And the way we're going to do it is we're going to go one by one. The person who picked the anime is going to tell us a little bit about it, and then we'll each kind of go around, say our thoughts, have a little quick round table discussion, and then move along. So I'm going to just go in order of how it's on my anime review list. So I don't remember who picked this. I think it ended up being me, weirdly enough, or what, maybe it was Sharif. I don't know. Cardfight Vanguard Overdress. Which one of us picked that?
That was definitely me.
Me. Sharif, you want to tell us a bit about Cardfight Vanguard Overdress? What is it?
Okay, and, so yeah.
How do you feel?
Okay, so just to go over for people who missed the first episode, Cardfight Vanguard Overdress is a new anime by Studio Clamp, which Studio Clamp is also a really great studio. About this boy called Yu Yu, and he's besides cross-dressing and Yuri tendencies that happens in this show. He's a kid who's kind of shy. He's pretty much like he pretty much just gets told what to do and he kind of just follows along. But he actually ends up falling into the world of Vanguard, through meeting individuals and such, and he gets into the game. And that's pretty much kind of like the overall, premise of the game. If you're familiar with card game anime, then you kind of know how that kind of plays out. But as far as the first, I think they took a break last week. So episode 4 came out this week, so I didn't watch it yet. But off of the first 3 episodes, and I've been watching Vanguard since the original, like 2011, such a bump in animation quality. This is the best Vanguard has looked by a long shot.
Yeah, I agree. Because, like, Vanguard never looks bad, but it does always look like a Saturday morning anime, which means a lot of, like, the characters kind of standing moderately still with recycled animations. And they do their best to do as many card fights as possible and, you know, repeat the same motions from the animation. They're summoning like Dark Magician every time.
Yeah. I also really do enjoy, outside of the animation, I do enjoy Yu Yu as a protagonist. It's weird because, like, at first I was kind of like, he's pretty much an Aichi, but then at the same time, he's very different from past protagonists, from the other incarnations of Vanguard as well. I like that Vanguard is like underground Fight Club. That's the only way I can put it. It's underground Fight Club, and I love it.
I want to express to you both how confused I was at everything that was happening in the first episode. I mean, from the moment it started, there was no slowing down on all the confusion. The mom likes dressing him up as a girl. It's like, okay, that's a thing that moms do. Like, don't knock that. My mom has dressed me up as a girl. Like,
I don't know. We're not his mom.
Was it his mom? I don't know who it was.
All three of them are just his big sisters.
Okay, I thought somebody called him his mom at some point. And then like after that, he goes out as dressed as a girl, and then like gets hit on. And that's how he is pulled into the world of underground card games, because like the girl that saves him, knows a guy that's also in it. And again, like, I don't know anything about Vanguard, so this was all extremely confusing, even the card game aspect, because as soon as they started playing the card game, I was like, I don't know what's happening. Is he winning? Is he winning? And then the animation just explodes in this frenzy of absolute chaos, and they're just, it's just like two dudes fighting, and I'm like, oh, wait, hold on, is everybody else seeing this? Or is this just like how they're imagining their themselves playing the card game? I'm so, and unfortunately, this is one of the shows that I only got to watch the first episode. I'm hoping, does the second episode go into the rules of Vanguard at all, like touch on them?
So that, I guess I'll do like my quick thing, like what I wanted to talk about real quick, because that goes off of it, is what's interesting about this series is that it is a Clamp show. If you've ever watched anything from Clamp, Holic, Tsubasa, Cardcaptor Sakura, it is a like shoujo light show that happens to have card games. So the card games are like not really explained. Like, it's super weird because I was, Sharif and I had like, I had been watching, like, I'm kind of a lapsed Vanguard fan. Sharif is, like he said, he's been watching forever. And Vanguard is normally a show that, unlike Yu-Gi-Oh, it always has like the shonen like mystical elements eventually, but it's normally very much like a show about playing a card game. Like, they play the game and buy booster packs and episodes because it's all about just selling the product, but it teaches you the rules. The first five episodes of the original series and the first two of the like remake series teach you verbatim like how to play the game. It's how me and Sharif learned how to play.
Yeah, it really was.
Well,
I was going to say, go on. Overdress has no concern with the card game. The card game is completely a vehicle for them to tell the story about this boy Yu-Yu and how Danji believes in him and thinks he has what it takes to be a great like card fighter and a bold, more bold person. And that's it. Like, it's so...
Yeah.
All right. I guess I got a problem with that, but I'll make it quick. Like, the reason why it's so important to establish the rules of any universe, obviously, but like if you're doing like a card game, because like just because the card game is the hinge around the character's development. So like, you know, the character's moments are going to come when playing the card game. He's going to learn to be assertive, right? And it's probably going to come through the card game. And those character beats are going to come through the card game. And part of the reason why I'm like, well, that sounds awful that they don't like at least give you an understanding of how the game works is that, like, if you don't know how the game works, you don't know when these moments might be happening. Like, they can make it like, it'd be like if in Sherlock Holmes, he never explains how he solved the mystery. He just solves it.
It's simple. It's done.
Which is basically Sherlock, the like BBC series, because like he's just like, oh yeah, I talked to some people and they told me everything and I'm a smart guy and I figured it out. And you're like, sure, cool.
So I think what's the best way to put this is that they treat the card game the way you would treat like a sports movie, where like you just assume everybody knows the rules to like if you watch The Replacements, you don't expect them to teach you football. They assume that you know enough about football to get like that there's a story going on around.
But even football movies and shows and things that revolve around sports subtly teach you the rules, like if you're not as familiar with it. Like, I noticed that they do that a lot where like I never knew how to play football, but when I watch football movies, like I get the rules because like in a way they explain it to you through both like dialogue and like, you know, usually you have the announcer like telling you, oh, they're in trouble if they don't get past this yard line on the next round, or you know
what you need for like the dramatic tension in those moments. So far, like I'm a little further than you guys, and like I'm on episode 4. I'm current with all the shows except for one. They are definitely building the show for the card games to be completely secondary, and like they maybe it's gonna change as time goes and the card games will come to the forefront, and as Yu learns more and gets more confident, like we'll learn more about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But right now, it's just a thing they do while they're becoming friends and these other storylines are playing. And it's so weird, man. Sharif,
yeah.
I want to know, Sharif, how do you feel about this series so far? Like, do you like this? Do you dislike this? Is this, like, a welcome
Okay, so I like it. I like it. And I think as a guy who has watched many, many card game anime, the Future Card Buddy fights, the Yu-Gi-Ohs, the Card Fight Vanguards, I like that Clamp took... and they kind of did this with Vanguard G, but then they kind of stopped. But they, like, the way they're approaching the story is, like, they really want to tell the characters and the character arcs and set up the story first. I think learning the card game is going to come, especially after the cliffhanger from episode 3, which I'm going to watch episode 4 as soon as this podcast is over. I think... after that development, I think Yu-Yu is actually gonna start getting more into the getting into the game, and he's gonna, and I think they're gonna actually kind of go slowly bridge it into, like, a, you know, learning more about how to play the actual game. But as far as, like, the way it's been panning out right now, I love it. I love it. I definitely think this is, like, the strongest entry since the reboot. And I really liked the reboot stuff a lot, but this is better. I like this a lot.
Yeah, like I've been enjoying it. My only notes that we didn't really discuss are that I love the Danji, Yu-Yu, and Megumi triangle. I find that very hysterical. I like that Danji, like, Aaron has gotten to see this, but Danji is completely like, nah, Yu-Yu's a guy. You're still cute, though.
I did kind of, like, get that in the very first episode. They were hinting at that very hard, and I was like, you know, it would be super brave of them to just have a bisexual like,
no,
this...
that's just Clamp.
That's just the way instead Clamp characters just look.
Instead, there's just, like, this awkward, like, tension where it's like, does this guy think this kid is, like, hot? What is happening?
The other thing,
again, confusion.
The other thing I do want to say is that I want the pervert Yakuza guy to come back, and I want him to get a, like, character arc. I want him to get some redemption. I don't know why. I just found him highly amusing.
Yes, yes.
Four episodes in,
Aaron, wait till you get to episode 2. Just wait till you get to episode 2.
I guess I'll say my last thoughts on the show is, like, I enjoy the animation. Hella confused about what's fucking happening, but ultimately, like, it didn't necessarily turn me off. I don't know if, like, this is the kind of show that if I just, like, watched a single episode, like, I would be drawn in, but that's mostly because I'm not, like, both, but again, like you said, the card game isn't even a big part of it, but, like, also I'm just not super into, like, card game shows. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. So I don't know if I would naturally just, like, continue the show.
Yeah, like, gotcha. My closing thoughts on Vanguard would be that, like, I think it's a interesting and cool, like, refresh, but it's definitely geared towards people who are already fans of at least the card game. It's something different for us. And I think, it, like Aaron said, like, if you're an outsider and you don't know the game, a lot of it's going to get lost in translation, but I enjoyed it. I also love Clamp.
Clamp for the win.
Yep. You have any closing thoughts, Sharif?
That's it. I mean, you pretty much hit it on nail on the head. What's next?
Well, next, just to make Aaron awkward because he's about to put chicken in his mouth.
Itadakimasu is
Way of the House Husband. It's an Aaron selection on the list.
All right.
Way of the House Husband is a Netflix anime. Or at least I think it was produced in part by Netflix. I don't know who the studio responsible for Way of the House Husband is. But it is a comedy show with the central premise of this former, like, extremely well-known Yakuza boss gives up the Yakuza altogether, just gives up that criminal lifestyle and just becomes a stay-at-home husband. He just, like, basic premises or, like, the basic stories usually revolve around him, like, cooking, cleaning, just doing, like, household chores. And oftentimes a lot of the comedy comes from, like, his former life kind of entering the picture, and he's just become the most wholesome human being known to man. he just loves his wife so much and wants to give her the best, but he's like this terrifying dude. Oh, and I guess one important aspect is that, like, not only was he a well-known Yakuza boss, but, like, he is most well-known for, like, murdering all of the other, sanctions, like, heads of other sanctions. He is this, like, terrifying figure to everybody, like, including other Yakuza members. But now he's just, like, super wholesome, but still has, like, this terrifying aura to him. I really enjoyed the show. I think it's really interesting because, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, but it's not really animated. It's like those like web comics people used to make where the web comics would move. And like they would, they use sound effects and like music to kind of edit it to make it feel dynamic. And I will say the editing of the show is top notch. Like, really well thought of, like, visual gags and jokes that use the editing to its full potential. I am a little disappointed that it's not, like, animated, that it's not, you know, it just feels like something that could have been done online easily. Like, if I could do that, like, I could scan pages of that show and do the same thing they did. It's not really that hard. But I will say it was thoughtfully executed in terms of, like, how the editing makes the comedy.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
I was gonna say the same thing. The motion comic, like aesthetic choice, was weird to me because
it's very weird.
The gag manga, because it definitely, the reason for doing an animated gag manga is so you can like fully animate it and let the like gags and the jokes breathe. And you don't get that with this. Like, you're still getting basically the panels from the comic and. So it took me out. It does get smoother from the first episode to the second, because the first one, the literal first part of the first episode, because it's like broken up into like little 5-minute episodes, and each one is very stiff. It is
basically
just watching panels.
Yeah. But like I said, it really works with the way the editing flows, really kind of, it saved it, because I was... Like, if I had just seen this without, like, without the sound on, I'd be like, what the fuck is this shit? But as soon as you turn the sound on, it's, like, comedy gold.
Yeah. I'm also just going to say this for the record. I love his wife, by the way. Like, the way they contrast each other is so perfect. It's great. It's great. It is great. And I just love it when any, like, when... Like, because you guys have watched a good bit, right? Because
I watched it all.
Okay. Yeah. So, like, all the scenes where he's, like, hanging out with, like, the other, like housewives and stuff, and, like, the episode where they play volleyball. it's great. Or the one where the wife's dad comes over and there's, and he's like, have you ever, do you like singing? And he's like, I never sung once. And in his head, he's being interrogated. It's the best.
I love his dad, like his father-in-law practicing how to ask him to play ball.
Yeah.
Cause he's not like cool enough.
It's so good.
So, I guess, like, I feel like we all kind of have the same opinion on this one. Am I, like, that it's, like, fun, it's a shame that it's not fully animated, but we all kind of just were compelled to watch all of it, because it was, like, very short and funny.
And it's also, and this is just because of the manga, the way it's broken up works well with the animated panel style, too, because it's, like, they're so short that it's just, they're just, like, the gags keep coming, and they're all kind of different, but all... function on the same basic premises. Very funny. It's the only show I've watched, and obviously none of the others are really comedies per se, but this is the only one where I found myself like laughing like out loud. There were scenes that, like, because living with Nina, like there are scenes that like I watch and I'll be like, they hit home. Like, I don't know, the cockroach one was really funny to me.
I have the cockroach episode number one on my list. It says it.
He got me.
He takes his shirt off.
He's like at home, like the house is in shambles, and he's like, he got me.
those are my favorite moments, is any time that, like, somebody walks in the front door and it looks like a crime scene.
It looks like he's been, like, murdered. Nope. I also like when he's, like, about to chop his finger off because he, like, failed something.
Oh, my God. Oh, that and, the episodes where he's with his like his buddy, his friend.
Yeah, I do like I said, I love how they bring in like other Yakuza members, and like this kid's just like some punk ass who like really wants to be a Yakuza member, but like just because he respects the main character so much, he just like starts becoming a wholesome like member of society.
The crepe guy.
It's great.
Oh my God, so good. The crepe guy's amazing.
Oh man.
The crepe guy's good.
Them taking the Instagram photos is just amazing.
They get like one like I just want to mention a couple of my favorite things. I love all his weird dog brand clothing.
Yes.
He has the weird pug on everything for reasons. And how his wife makes him wear the apron outside because she realizes it slightly undercuts is scary. And then the ending cat bits are just 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Dude, the cat bits are great.
I don't have any closing thoughts on this one. This one was short and sweet, just like the show.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we're gonna keep it on Aaron because my notes say that's how it works, because I put them in order of how I watch them. And we have Joran, the Princess of Blood and Snow. I think that's the full title.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron, tell us what Joran's about.
So at its core, it's a revenge story. It's pretty simple in terms of like what the main character's motivations are. Mm-hmm. It's weird because like the show feels like a bunch of different genres kind of combined. It's like partly magical girl fighter, it's partly Kill Bill, it's partly political thriller, and a lot of that stuff is stuff that, like, because I've only finished two episodes, is like I haven't gotten to a lot of it. But essentially this story takes place during the Meiji period, and Japan at this time is like this like much higher tech version of what it was then, because they have access to this kind of uncharacterized resource as of right now that they extract. And your main character is this woman who comes from a village, I guess, that was slaughtered by the government. It's because her clan has this special ability, magical girl transformation ability kind of thing, that they, I guess, are exploiting in trying to like give to like people to create super soldiers, I assume is like the kind of basic premise. But at the core of it is just this woman who wants revenge and is joining the secret society of like political assassins, and it's interesting. Like, it's hard to kind of gauge where the show is going to go. There's a lot of information in the first episode that you're just like, I don't know what's going on. But I will say I enjoyed it. The animation was somewhat disappointing to me, because when I watched the trailer, they focused a lot on the really cool animation when she goes into her like power transformation mode, where they animate her kind of like old brush paintings, like Japanese brush paintings, and I think that animation's super cool, but the rest of the show feels kind of dull and stiff, and I'm like, yeah, it could have been better, especially for a fighting anime with like an interesting political thriller section. I don't know, there's a lot that could have been done, but ultimately I think it's still cool. I would definitely watch more of it.
This is the one that I didn't. I am not current on. I watched the two episodes and then I haven't gone back. So, the biggest note I have here is that it has pretty visuals for the most part, but it's kind of lacking in exposition in a weird way. Like, it's rare that I see a show and feel it needs more exposition.
There's a lot going on, but like part of me feels like, and that's the cool political thriller aspect of it, where it's like, okay, there's a lot that needs to be explained here, and I guess we kind of gotta just go along with it if we want to know more.
Yeah, I see, and I felt like that's why the, I personally felt like that's why the first episode was so info heavy, because I was sitting there for a minute and I was like, bro, this is a lot.
Because a lot of stuff is happening. There is tons of information being thrown at you, but there's none of the info is defined or categorized. It's just stuff.
Yeah, it's just there. So, yep. I mean, but I do agree with both of you guys. The show is definitely visually stunning. It is definitely a feast for the eyes on that front. I definitely do get what Aaron was saying, because to me it was like old school Kill Bill meets House of Cards revenge tale. Like that's pretty much the vibes I was getting from it. I am a sucker for revenge stories, believe it or not. Just my cheery disposition. I actually really do enjoy a good revenge tale, because it's always cool to see, you know, the motivations for it. And then normally by the end of it, it's either, do they follow through with it? Does something change, you know, morals and stuff like that? Revenge tales are pretty good for that. So I like it. I definitely want to watch more of it though. It's one of those things, like I've only watched like the first three episodes. So I'm not caught up, but, I want to see where it goes. I definitely want to see where it goes from here.
So I think the most interesting aspect to me is, and this is kind of a minor spoiler, but like at the beginning of the show, she has this little girl with her that calls her big sister, the main character. And you're like, okay, but you don't question it. And then at the end of the first episode, like it's implied the little girl tries to kill the main character. Mm-hmm. And then that's explained by the second episode where she's like, oh, she killed my family trying to get revenge, like trying to build up her own stats to like get revenge on. So it's like, it's another one of these kind of stories that hinders on the cycle of violence and how it affects other people. I just thought it was interesting. This little girl was just like fully prepped to like murder this woman.
But I do like how the episodes are set up, where like every episode they kind of reveal a little bit more, and then you're like, oh, so like how you were saying, so like they keep giving you nuggets to keep you watching. So I guess on that front, that's what keeps me going on it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like I watched the first two episodes, and both episodes end on a cliffhanger. The first one being the little girl, and the second one is the blonde lady murder, where you're like, murder. Oh, I like. That was unexpected.
Which was annoying though, because like it's one of those story things where it's like this person knows everything about everything, and they just get murked like before they get to reveal any information. You're like, God damn it! Why would you? That's just such a cheap way of like making me want to know more. It's like, here's a character who can explain everything about everything.
Rereading a favorite like manga of mine that I never got to finish called Nisei Koi, and it's a like silly romance like harem manga and it does that constantly because it's got to keep going, so like it went on for 200 chapters, so they can't give up the ghost like at any time, so I get that pain. my last thoughts on this thing are crossbow parasols that are bulletproof are neat. And that one guy.
Yeah, I was like, what is this, the Kingsman?
Yeah. And that one guy has a lightsaber cane sword because reasons.
The whole time I was thinking, like, this is just Japanese Kingsman. Which would be a really cool series, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah, I'd watch that.
It'd be called, like, Ronin or something like that. I don't know.
The Shogun's Men? I don't know.
The Shogun's Men, the extreme Shogun's Men, gentle Shogun's Men.
But it'd be a really long name. The Centralized Committee of Shonen it'd be like a really long name. All
right. So does anybody have any finishing thoughts?
I enjoy it.
Definitely want to see where it goes. I think this is the only thing that we really have on our list that's pretty much like really different from like a lot of the stuff on our list. So I want to see where it goes.
I don't know. I feel like the diversity in our selection is pretty wide. Like considering like Way of the House Husband, and we got robot fighting stuff, we got card game stuff. So I feel like there's a lot of diversity on the plate. My last thoughts on Jiran is that the OP is a fucking bop. It's so
that
good.
That song is good.
It's really good.
That OP is a bop though.
Yeah, like I'm definitely, I think, the most lukewarm on this one out of all of us. I think it has some interesting points, but I don't know. I think it's a show that might need like a quarter of a season to get you in.
Mm, yeah, that's fair. I'd agree with that.
So, we're going to keep moving though. We're going to be moving on to The World Ends With You, which is unexpectedly mine and not Sharif's.
It really is.
So I'm going to now explain Sharif's favorite video game.
Yes.
The World Ends With You is the animated adaptation of the video game of the same title for the DS and Switch and iPhones. It circles around Neku, who wakes up in Shibuya Crossing, and he is now stuck in something called the Reaper's Game. Basically, he partners with a girl named Shiki, and over the next week, he has to complete a bunch of tasks and try and not get eliminated by these monsters called Noise or killed by the Reapers themselves in order to come back to life. That's the general breakdown of it. And there's a lot more that goes in to the whole like series that they're going through. But from watching it so far, I think it's got some pretty animation and very cool blending. I hate when it goes into the 3D, but that's just me.
Yeah, okay.
I do really love the re-characterization of Neku.
Yes. That's a big one, yeah.
So yeah, I guess that's like my first big point, and Aaron won't really get this, but in the game, I actually replayed the first few missions of the game when I started watching this. Neku is a dick. Like, we're of course doing some spoilers for these episodes. In the second episode of The World Ends With You, or maybe it's in the first, actually, like one of the Reapers tells Neku to kill Shiki and they'll let him out.
It was the first.
Yeah. And yeah, there's no hesitation in the game. He just like spins around and fucking Darth Vader's.
Darth Vader's.
But in the show, we get to watch him be a person who is genuinely confused and conflicted and is a little closed off from the world. So I'm really, really digging that so far. And the pacing is really fast, though. And I think that in this 12 episodes, they're going to do the whole game, which I'm a little surprised about, but I think it's cool. What do you guys think? Whoever wants to pick it up next.
Well, I have a question. I got a question.
Yeah.
Which version of Sora is Neku? Is he like a computer generated one, or like... is he like a parallel universe one, or
no,
like
he's actually Neku? He's in Kingdom Hearts.
Neku's in Kingdom Hearts. Yeah. Jesus Christ!
It's in Dream Drop Distance.
How many Sora clones does there need to be before somebody stops Square Enix?
No, stops Nomura. It's just Tetsuya Nomura.
What does he wear big shoes like that?
Yes.
Yes.
How many more zippers? I want him to like have to own his specific art style, where he has to wear these like big goofy shoes and like zippers on everything. Just everything has a zipper. Like, even his wallets has to have like zippers. This is one of the ones where I only watched the first episode. I agree with Scott. I'm not into the 3D stuff very much. I think it looks real bad in some parts. Like the bad guys, the Noise, I do not like their design at all. They look bad to me. I do like the character design, mostly because I really love like thick, bold outlines. Like I really like that style in animation. So they don't bother me as much, despite the fact that the character designs just feel like repurposed, like other repurposed Square Enix characters. Like, they don't bother me so much because I kind of like their outlines and how they look and them interacting in the 3D worlds. Like, whenever they do like the kind of 3D environment and like map the characters onto them, doesn't look too bad. Other than that, though, I don't really know what to say about it. It didn't really have me hooked. I was kind of like, okay, but I don't have an attachment to the video game at all. So I don't know where this is going. I will say it has a good pull in premise of like, this game is going to last 7 days, survive or die, basically, which is like enough to get you like invested in a show because it's like, okay, not a lot of time, which means there's going to be some fast movement. Like you said, the pacing is going to be pretty fast. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, I might even give it a watch just because it's like, I could probably finish this quick. So yeah. I don't know. Sharif, how'd you feel about it?
Oh boy. I think everyone's waiting for my thoughts. Oh, yeah. First things first, the art, which Aaron did mention, and the art is by far really, really good. That was the thing I was most worried about, actually, because that hyper contrast on the characters where, like, you know, shadows are pitch black and, you know, yeah, colors are very poppy. You can tell which character is which. So as far as like really keeping true to the game's art style, it really did that really, really well. Sometimes the art can look a little funny in places, but I think that's just really to the art style. But even in the original game, the art style looks a little funky in a few places.
And like, not to cut you off, but like, I think what me and Aaron both are saying, when it comes to the art, it's not the 2D, it's the 3D switches that are like lackluster.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'll say specifically that I don't like the noise. I don't like the bad guy designs. They are pretty, to me, they're generic and bad looking. Like they don't look good. I will say at least they like kept to a kind of specific idea of what the bad guys are going to look like, which obviously from the game, but like they look like digital assets, unlike the characters that are very striking. The environment itself is very kind of muted. And like you said, it's a nice contrast to differentiate what these characters are experiencing.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's that, and I will touch onto the 3D part. Like, certain parts it looks cool. Like, I thought, like, the frog noise in the first episode, they looked really cool, so, like, spewing their bubbles. But then, like when they got to, like, the giant bat and stuff like that, it was kind of like, eh. But I think a lot of the visual flair, like, you know, kind of like makes me turn, like, I kind of turn a blind eye to it because there's a lot of visual flair going on when they're fighting too, like when they're trying to be in sync and stuff like that. They have like this Ultra Instinct effect, which you guys know what I'm talking about. Yep. When they're like teaming up and stuff. I love this series so much and I could talk about it for hours and days, but I will like kind of wrap everything up with my closing thoughts. I do agree with Scott. They did handle Neku a lot better. Because I noticed it right away. I was like, Neku isn't as much of a dick. Is that just me or I haven't played this game in a while? And I was like, no, it does kind of, because they had to lighten up on his character a little bit, some of my favorite moments of that were really good, like character building moments for him, are taken out. Mm-hmm. And you know, because they need to kind of speed it up, which honestly, the animation is a huge promotion to play the sequel game and everything as well. So I am accounting for all of that. But as far as it goes, it's a really cool ride. It's definitely unique. It's got his visual flair. I love the remix to Twister for the opening. It's great.
It's they a made bop. It fit way better.
But yeah, it's great.
I would have expected with it being a last minute substitution.
Yeah.
So that was cool. My like final thoughts are like, I think it is a good companion piece to the game, and a very, I think when it's all said and done and all, I think it's 12 or 13 episodes are out, I think it's going to be a really cool thing that you could watch to know what happened and understand the gist of it so that you can go play Neo when it comes out this summer. But I don't think it's going to replace the game by any means. I think the game is still going to be the best way to get that story.
Yeah.
So, and unless Aaron has any last thoughts on that one, I think it's time to move on to our next show, which is Megalobox 2 Nomad. I love this show. It's my favorite one out of all the ones I watched. I don't know how you guys are going to feel. Megalobox, the original series is about a guy named Joe who was just a no-name underground boxer who threw fights. And this is the sequel series to that. It's, I think, the only true sequel series on our list here. And it picks up with Joe 5 to 6 years. I think it's technically... No, it's 7 years. I did the math. I figured it out by listening to context clues in the later episodes. It is 7 years after the end of the first season, and he is down and out. He is run away from home. He is throwing himself into fights and just letting himself kind of get the shit kicked out of him. He is addicted to pills and just really at his lowest point, like much lower than we had ever seen him before, and clearly he is dealing with some serious depression, and something has happened in his past, and you slowly get to watch him rebuild himself by making friends with a man named Chief, and you know, this is kind of his comeback story after a 5-year depression and bender. Like, there's so many things that I want to talk about this, but I want to pass it to you guys so far and get your like initial reads on this one.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead, Sharif.
Yeah. I was gonna say, because for to do this, I had to watch season one of Megalobox. Mm-hmm. So, I will say this. I think as far as what we have here, I think I said this about Jiren too, but I like, is Megalobox considered like a seinen, like a more of like an adult type of series? Because
Technically, yes, which is super interesting because it's based on Champion Joe, which I don't know if it was technically a seinen back in the day.
Okay. Because I was even from watching like the first like two episodes of the first season, I was like, this is like real heavy seinen, like seinen vibes here. I was meaning to ask you that for the longest, but no, Megalobox is it's really good. It's really good. I mean, the whole fighting aspect's really cool, but you know, with them like you basically using like for people who don't know, they fight basically using like these exoskeletons to like it, like help enhance like their punches and stuff like that. And like it's brutal. It is a brutal type of show. But I think a lot of it is just like the characters are so interesting. You know, especially the main character. I like how the first season is basically an underdog story. It's like an underdog story with a twist, which, you know, I think anybody can get behind an underdog story. But like with starting season two now, it's crazy. But I think it's an interesting take to take characters, especially when you're doing like sport related anime. Because like normally the first few seasons, like Kenichi, Hajime no Ippo, which me and Scott know a lot of, like the first few seasons are always about the hero on the come up. Mm-hmm. And then after that, like, especially with like Ippo, it's like Ippo defending his title and stuff like that. So I think with Megalobox, with him being like kind of in the down and out, like you're like, what, you're like, what happened? You know? So it's cool. I think it's interesting. And I'm definitely a fan. So.
Yeah, and I'll remind everybody in case, and ask this as well before Aaron gives us his thoughts, is that I kind of asked and called an audible a bit last week and requested that everybody watch the first 4 episodes of season 2 because they make a really lovely little arc, and I think you guys both got to do that.
Yeah,
Just so if anybody watching, you do know that we'll be potentially spoiling the first 4 episodes of Megalobox as opposed to 2, just because I felt they fit so perfectly together that I thought they were almost required watching at this point. But anyway, Aaron, to you, just wanted to give that warning.
Yeah.
So I'm going to agree with Scott. This was actually my favorite of the animes we watched. And honestly, probably one of my new personal favorites. I think mostly because like it's just different from everything like that anime has put out for so long. It's like a grounded, interesting character built tale that does not shy away from being overtly political. And I mean, like most animes don't, but like this one is pretty like just like, yes, this is about this. We are telling a tale about marginalized people and their struggles through this like strange boxing story. And like so I guess if anybody's confused, like this is actually one of the things I found interesting, because like the show takes place in Japan, right? It's never specified, but I'm pretty sure like just by the character design and the world around, it seems like it's Japan that this show is taking place in. And so like there are like Joe basically goes to ends up in a kind of immigrant camp, and the native people, I shouldn't say the native, but the Japanese people really hate these immigrants. Throughout the four episodes, they call them parasites. They tell them to go back to where they came from. Just very much like, which again, this is why it was so bizarre, because they're like, this is Japan, right? Why did these Mexicans come all the way to Japan? This is the new land of opportunity, is Japan. I just thought that was a really funny framing device, but like other than that, it's perfect, because it is just exactly what those people experience upon coming to a new country that just hates their guts. And I thought it was a really interesting kind of motivator for that first mini arc, like you mentioned. Joe is an interesting character. I will say that the only thing that the show suffers from, for me personally, is that it's cliche. Like, that is it. Like, that's the only thing I don't mind. It's basically a sports redemption film. Like, every sports franchise, like, major sports franchise has one where, like, the character is now older. They're, like, running away from some part of their past. They're dealing with some sort of substance abuse. They find a scrappy young individual who's very sympathetic to help train to be like the next big thing.
I think
so. It's like it hits like all of those things like perfectly.
And I guess,
but that's not a big deal to me.
No, and they have like little interesting twists on all of that though, because like
sure, yeah.
Joe is definitely like Joe's not old. Joe is like 30, which is like an interesting aspect. And like Chief is definitely older than him and been like, and that's one of the I guess the neat parts is watching like Joe trains somebody that is his junior, but in so many ways he is the senior. Like he is a champion of this sport. He is somebody who knows what it takes to become number one, and yet he lost when it came to anything emotional or dealing with life. The moment life gave him something genuinely hard to fight against, he couldn't do it alone. And Chief, on the other hand, has been left literally alone and has managed to rebuild that and give hope to other people while looking up to Joe. And it, like, it's this cycle of him getting back the hope he gave people in season one, and it's really cool watching all that happen.
I think the perfect way I can probably summarize Megalobox is the first season is your very standard like underdog story affair, whereas season two subverts a little bit of everything that you kind of thought was going to play out from the way season one ends. And it's basically the same thing with Iron Blood. It's very Iron Blooded Orphans that way. If no one hasn't seen it, season one is very standard Gundam affair, whereas season two completely subverts the whole Gundam thing on its head. Which that's why I really love that series. I think that's how I see Megalobox. Like season two kind of subverts a little bit of stuff from season one, which is great, which is cool, which I enjoy.
It's interesting because in the first one, Joe is from the bottom, and we watch him reach the top, and then we flip it, and it's the next major story of his life where he put himself at the bottom and is trying to get back to normalcy.
I guess a couple other notes that don't necessarily revolve around the story. The art's gorgeous. Very Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah.
Vibes, right?
Yeah. Aaron, did you get to watch any of season one at all?
I did not. I did not. Okay. I will probably go back and watch it though.
So one of my issues, because I do genuinely love boxing and martial arts, and I love action anime. I think we all enjoy it. The fights in season one kind of suck. And they clearly paid more attention to the choreography and the animation and everything in this one, because like the fights aren't like the suit. They don't take. We don't like Hajime to Ippo this. It's not like three episodes of fight or anything. Like the fights are moments in the story, and they're important moments. Yeah.
They're not even like they're not big epic affairs. They're very kind of. They feel like watching a boxing match. There, they can be slow, arduous with moments of explosive action, and then it's been interesting. Like I really enjoy the action as well. The other thing I was gonna say, I love the musical motifs and the just the music of the show in general is really cool. It's like and I don't know, and because I haven't watched first season, I don't know like to what extent this has always been a part of it, but like very heavily Hispanic influence.
That is a season two thing, and it's set
that's really cool. I love that. I don't know, like I feel like I can't watch the show without it. It just feels like it's in its DNA.
Well, like what makes me happy about it is because it's brought in a natural format, because it starts with Chief playing for real in the bar, and then it becomes the motif of his story going forward. Is this is the influence that carries Joe onward throughout the rest of the story. And it's really cool because like it starts in a, you know, practical way. You know, we see it happen. So it's motivating.
No, I love it. And I love the intro. By the way, every time I hear the intro and you see Nomad on the screen, I immediately think of Paint It Black. Like, does anybody else like feel like it's about to go into Paint It Black?
No.
I hear like I just imagine like it's about to start playing Paint It Black. I will also and this is something that just reminded me of like weird in-universe like things that kind of surprised me, and this is just going back a few shows just because it real quick reminded me of this. In Duran, do you guys remember how like randomly one of the characters starts speaking English? Like, so they're all I don't know if you did you guys watch
I'm
guessing dubbed.
I don't know, I think I had to watch a sub because I don't think it has a dub.
Because in subs,
yeah.
They're in like a party, and, in the show, it's during the Meiji period. So there's like, at this point, there has been like commerce between Japan and Europe. So like, there are a couple of European characters that make appearances, and like one of the European characters just starts speaking in English to another character, and she speaks English back, and then switches back to Japanese. But because like normally what they do is they just have every character speak Japanese whenever it's dub version. Doesn't matter like what a region they're supposed to be from, doesn't like ever matter like who they're supposed to be, they just speak Japanese. So I thought the like random switch was really cool, and I was like, oh, that's really interesting, like because I don't ever see that in animes. It really brings me into the world because it makes me feel like I'm a Japanese character and I'm also dealing with like different people from different regions. And to an extent, Megalobox does that too, because obviously the Mexican characters will speak Spanish from time to time, very rarely, but from time to time. Like the first song that you were mentioning is all sung in Spanish.
Yeah, I mean all the title cards are in Spanish.
Yep.
All the title cards for the whole show, because it does have title cards interstitials at the 50-minute mark or so.
So good.
All of them are in Spanish. Every episode title is in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like it has the very strong Hispanic influence, which is neat for me because like I never see that.
And that's what I was wondering, like, is the author like half Hispanic Hispanic roots?
I don't know about for this series, but Champion Joe is not. Champion Joe is a nearly 50-year-old show. Megalobox is an anniversary show of it. It's from like the age of Tezuka. Like, it's one of the first major... It's probably the first boxing manga. Which is one thing I did want to bring up that is kind of weird and clashes sometimes is certain characters didn't get redesigns. And it's specifically, for some reason, I don't know, this is just something I find interesting, is Like, Joe, if you look up Champion Joe right now, he looks nothing like Joe in the show.
Gotcha.
Gensaku got a redesign to fit the art style. He still looks like Gensaku, but he's redesigned to look like he fits in the Megalobox universe. But Sachiko and all the kids still have that, like, 60s to, like, 70s
yes!
anime style.
I was gonna bring that
yeah,
up. They're
yeah,
like the
yeah.
only characters who look completely different from everybody else.
Uh-huh.
Like, what the fuck?
I want to know who made that call. It's very interesting. Oh, I guess Sharifa has been ghosted for a moment. To let you know, season one, Aaron has a much more like hip hop and urban like soundtrack. Like, there's a really cool.
He's supposed to be black, right? Like, that was the impression I got.
We don't know what Joe is. Joe doesn't really know himself, I don't think.
Well, like, the character that he's seeing, who is, I assume, a big part of the first season,
mm-hmm. yeah, it's like a...
is very clearly a black character.
No.
No?
No.
Huh. They, like, really make him look like a black character.
I
assume that was a
like,
part
he's...
of, like...
You notice throughout the series that anybody who is outside of the city and doesn't have money tends to be more tan. And I think it's
okay,
the,
yeah.
Like
yeah, yeah. I noticed that too.
Joe is definitely most like supposed to be like mixed because he's supposed to be a mutt, a mongrel. Like he's
yeah.
called Junk Dog in the original season. So like that's his origins. Gansu-saku, I don't think is. It's just anybody who's like working class normally has more of a tan separate them further from a lot of the people in the city.
Which
has
again, is so, like, it's so good to see, like, an anime deal with, like, race and class in this way, because you don't normally get that. You usually get, like, a bad allegorical take on, like, race or class sometimes. Like, it's just bad. And this, like, feels very well handled and, like, it's very thoughtful. About how it handles these characters, and I don't know, it's extremely sympathetic to marginalized and working class people, in a way that other shows don't seem to really be.
Yep, and it's really cool. Like we're getting to see the hope that Gearless Joe gave to these people in the first season, and how it's kind of coming back to him in season two, but. I think that's enough about Megalobox because I will literally sit here and talk about it all night because I adore it now. I like season one and I love season two so much. It's
yeah.
fantastic. So unless anybody else has any final closing thoughts, RIP Wolfred, I will miss you.
I'm good.
All right. Then we're going to move to our final show, SSSS Dyna Zenon. Take it away, Sharif. Is your camera just exploded now?
Can you see me?
Can you toggle your camera off and on?
No, my camera's on.
Can you turn it off and turn it back
can
on?
Can you see me?
No, because I can't see you.
Oh, okay, hold on. Boop. Hold on. And boop. All right. Am I there?
No, I'm gonna try. There you are. I fixed it. Yay.
You see me?
Yep, you're back now. I don't know what happened. My computer keeps doing this. It did it to Aaron at the beginning of the stream. Anyway, so yeah, done is done.
Okay.
Take it away, sir.
All right, so SSSS Daizamon is actually a part of a long-running Gridman series, which I did not know until I did more research on it. But it's basically about this kid named Yomogi, who basically ends up running into this mysterious guy who Gamma. I can't think of saying his name right. And he is a kaiju. He calls himself a monster tamer from the subs, but in the official.
Oh no, Sharif is gone. They took him away for talking about the subs versus the dubs.
No. Oh, I'm here.
Hi.
I'm here. Hi.
Okay.
Can you see me?
Yeah, you started mentioning subs versus dubs and the computer gods got angry.
Okay. So basically, in the sub, yeah, Gamma is like a kaiju user. But in the subs, he's a monster. They say monster tamer. Well, in the subs that I was watching, and basically what happens is kaiju or monsters start appearing in the world, and they get a giant robot to fight the monsters. I mean, that's basically what it is. It's a part of the long running Gridman series, which I did not know about. I don't know. I'm just saying it again, just in case I got cut off. Which I did not know. So I guess if you have more familiarity with the Gridman series, I do not. Maybe there's a little bit more of an appeal here. Honestly, I'm not gonna lie. This was the one. This was actually the one that was the hardest for me to get into. I don't know, man. It's. I don't know. Like the whole like, okay, we're gonna fight monsters and giant robot. Would you think coming from me, I would be like, yeah, I'm about it. But like the first episode was just pretty much like very like samey. I don't know. The first episode didn't draw me in completely. It definitely took like an episode or two. I like it. It's okay. The animation's pretty cool.
I mean, it's Trigger.
So like, yeah, it's gonna look great. Every character looks super unique, and you can tell who is who right away. So no fronts on that. I'm just waiting for like when does it pull like the studio trigger and gets like bananas, which I mean, I guess it's already bananas, but more bananas. Mm-hmm. Which, you know what I mean? Every Trigger anime does it.
So I have a, like, it's a minor spoiler, but I pointed this out. Like, I was like episode one, they're in a city, and like episode two, they're in the countryside. In episode three, they end up in space. Like,
space.
Trigger.
It's just everywhere.
Yeah, they are wild. Yeah, man, I don't know, like, I've been digging Dinozenon. I liked it better than Gridman, because Gridman, I thought, started off kind of cool, but I don't know, even though it's only 13 episodes, like, I never finished it. Like, I felt like it got long in the tooth, the original the Gridman from Trigger. I just think is fun. It doesn't feel like anything special to me so far, or anything crazy or different. Yeah. I was just enjoying it. I do love Koyomi. He's the unemployed guy. I can empathize with him so much. Aaron, you're muted.
I was gonna say, yeah, I feel him. He's cool. He's just like,
I like how
I don't know if it's his sister. I don't know like who she is specifically as a cousin. Okay, so like, I like how she's like, what if you get paid? And he's like, oh, I'd be employed. In Japan, it's like such a status thing. Like, to be unemployed is basically to be inhuman. Like, it's so important. I mean, like, you could say it's something similar in America too, just not to like the degree it might be in Japan. Mm-hmm. So like his character is pretty funny, because he's just like, he was always sad that he's unemployed.
Oh, man. The moment when he runs into the the lady that also works with the main character guy, and he's like definitely sad because he likes her, but at the same time like mildly proud because he's like, I have a job. I'm helping people.
So my thoughts on the show. Honestly, like, I completely forgot that this was like a robot versus kaiju show.
Yeah.
I forgot, like, when we picked it that's what it was. So I was like, okay, cool. So, like, I went into it. And here's what I'll have to say. The first episode, like, this is going to sound horrible. I actually liked it less when I found out that it was a giant robot versus kaiju show. I was like, oh, okay, that's what this is.
Cool. Aaron was just like, what is this?
Well, because, like, the opening to it, I love the slow burn, like, for the first, like, 20 or, like, 15 to 20 minutes of the show is, like, this slow burn where, like, you see these unique characters, and they all have interesting characters. Like, I like the dialogue. The dialogue feels surprisingly natural for an anime like this. So I was into the characters, and I love the, like, little mysterious hints they were throwing with, like, random things just starting to float. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, cool. I'm super into this. Like, interesting, like, mystery elements, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then a kaiju shows up, and he just is like, okay, I'm just going to use this. And they just all end up in this giant robot. And I'm like, what? No!
They hit the trigger button.
What?
They hit the trigger button.
I will say, like, some of the comedy stuff does work for me. Like, I liked how in the second episode, like, the main character doesn't want, like, to be a part of it at first. And so, like, when he gets in the suit, he's like, I don't know what to do. It's like he's trying to, like, move the arms. And I was like, I like how, for once, it's not, like, intuitive how these things work. Because, like, in every other anime with giant robots, like, besides maybe, like, Gundam, they all kind of just seem to instinctually know what the hell they're doing.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm moving the arms.
Yeah, I love that they, like, literally have, like, team practice for it and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty great.
It is wildly silly, though, the entire concept. It's as silly as, like, a giant robot versus kaiju fight thing could get.
I love that they lean into it with, like, they literally carry around their, like, vehicles, like,
yes,
their toys.
They're, like, their toys!
Like, when Goma takes it apart, it just starts handing people action figures.
I was like, whoa!
This is yours!
And all it needed after that was, like, an advertisement for where you could buy the toys in real life.
Oh, man. I don't know if you guys noticed it, but I adore the Dinozenon, like, him. There's like,
yes,
like a
that,
him chorus.
That actually made me laugh.
Yeah.
I love stuff like that.
I thought that was cool.
It brought so me good. Joy. And Galma with all his jobs, like, who's hiring him?
I don't know.
Every time you see
government?
It's a different job.
I also like that that's like the main character's struggle in the first two episodes is he's like, oh, well, I gotta get to work. There's like a kaiju destroying the city and he's like, oh no, my manager's calling me. I was like, that's real. This is how somebody would act in real life for sure. You're like, oh no, my manager's calling at my Nordstrom job, at my job packing boxes.
Oh god.
Oh, man. Sharif, do you have any closing thoughts on Dinozenon?
Well, if there's a kaiju attack and you're in a robot and your manager is calling you, don't pick it up. That's all I can say.
I can totally see that being, like, a function of, like, if I was helping to write this anime, it would be like an ongoing joke that he keeps getting fired from jobs. But like his employers know that he's saving the world. Like he's like, oh, look, oh, I got this giant robot. I destroyed the kaiju. He's like, well, that's no excuse. You weren't here on time. You didn't meet quota. I'm sorry. I got to let you go.
You know, called no show. You should have at least sent a text.
You know, called no show.
The business is literally destroyed. Like, well, you know.
That
maybe if you were there managing the store, it wouldn't be gone.
That would be the catharsis in the last episode, is we would get to watch all the businesses of all these jerk bosses get broken.
He's like, as the giant robot, just like accidentally kicking them, like, I don't know.
Oh, jeez. So yeah, man, that has been our so far like reviews of these six shows: Vanguard, Cardfight Vanguard, Overdress, Way of the Household Husband, or the House Husband, Joran, Princess of Blood and Snow, The World Ends with You Animated, Megalobox 2 Nomad, and SSSS Dinozenon. But my last question for you guys is, if you had to give like a top three out of those right now, what do you think would be in your top three?
Well, Megalobox Nomad would probably be at the top, as I said before. Way of the House Husband, just from the sheer joy it brings me. A show hasn't made me laugh like that in a while. And the third one is actually the hardest one to figure out. If I had to pick one out of all of them, oh boy. this is actually harder. This last one is. Yeah. It's I think it'd be between SSSS and like I said, I'm not a big into like big robots versus kaiju, but like I think there's a lot of fun like comedy that I like. The writing of the characters is interesting, which again like is so I don't know why it shocks me so much, but the writing feels really good and fluent. So I'll go with that one as my number three.
Third. Okay. I think my listing is gonna be very similar to Aaron's. Megalobox was definitely a very pleasant surprise, so that is definitely the top. Way of the House Husband is definitely like I love comedies, so if there's something that can make me laugh, it's definitely a top tier for me. For my third is gonna be hard. third is hard. I like Diane Zamon. Oh man. What is my it's because a lot of them I like.
Like Jiran is like was my next choice after that, and it was very close because I have like a similar not necessarily apathy, but like a basic similar, like, yeah, I would watch this. I'll keep watching this. Mm-hmm. Kind of feel to it.
Watch it, yeah. Yeah, okay, so it would be Megalobox, Way of the House Husband, and I'm out of new stuff. I guess I would have to put, I can't put The World Ends With You because that's like pure bias. So I would probably have to say I can't pronounce it. The Gridman Show, okay? Goodness gracious.
Oh, God. So, yeah, I'm similar. So Megalobox is definitely my number one. That was the one I was looking forward most going into the series, and I thought it was just going to be like a cool looking sequel, and then it ended up like, it was an anime that made me cry, and it wasn't because, like, I'm a sappy romantic. It's like it actually made me cry, and that doesn't happen often.
Yeah.
And I saw it. I fucking called the scene that made me cry, and I was like, don't do it, anime, and then it did it, and I cried.
It did it. It definitely did it. We all know the moment he's talking about. It definitely did it.
Oh, yeah.
So that's my first one. Weirdly enough, Cardfight Vanguard is my second. I don't know what about that show makes me like it so much. I think it's a mix of like coming back to Cardfight and it being a studio that I really enjoy. I've been very much into like slice of life, like romance-y type things lately, like very Clamp-esque style. And I don't know, I find myself looking forward to that show every week.
Okay.
And after like re-going through this list, I think the other one that I just had a ton of fun with, and I'm excited to watch it. I was kind of waiting for a bunch of episodes to build up. Was Dinozenon, just because it's like good junk food for me. I don't think it's like the best show on the list.
It's the Big Mac.
Yeah, man. It's the one that I feel like I can just put on and have fun with for a little bit and not,
yeah,
you know, like be afraid that it's going to make me cry or that like I'm going to get angry.
It might.
Like,
yeah.
I have like little qualms with all the other ones. Like House Husband was really short, and like the animation really irks me sometimes. I think the content is great, but the animation bumps me up. And Jorah just wasn't clicking for me. And I think The World Ends With You. I do enjoy it, but I don't like the fight scenes, and that really brings me out because I think that's a big part of
game. Action. I can agree with that. So. See, Cardfight Vanguard would be my Big Mac because, like, it's my joke. It's the one I go to all the time. So it's my Big Mac. So I couldn't put it as, like, my number three, really.
All right. Well, like, we know what our top threes are. But here's another fun one. Which one has the best OP? I'll go first because mine is... I think Jiran was the most catchy. It's got fun animation. It's got cool transitionary stuff in there. It works on a lot of levels. Like for me, an OP isn't just about the song, but like how it melds with the animation. and I think it just has like the most unique of them. I don't know. It's that one just is the best to me. And a close second. Well, not a close second. One of my favorite songs of all of them was definitely The Way of the House Husband. I do like the song, even though there's like no animation. The song's great.
I like the song. I do like the song of Way of the House Husband. Oh man, what? I mean, I'm gonna have to give it to The World Ends With You. I like Twister. I'm just a sucker for that song. It's such a bop every time I hear it. Like, I've been wanting to play. Like, I've literally been like, since the anime's been out, I've been going back and playing the game again, because like that OST is fire, and to hear it in the anime, it is so good. I will also say, Aaron, you just said it. You just
Jiran.
The Jiran song is probably definitely is really catchy too. I would say another one, but I actually found a way. I actually did get to watch a little bit of Eden Zero. An episode. Yes, and the opening to Eden Zero is actually a bop too, so maybe so.
I'll have to listen to that at some point. I don't, so I'll be honest, I none of them like super stuck with me, and I perform sacrilege. I tend to, after the first time I watch it, fast forward through the opening.
Okay, yeah, I feel you.
I'm gonna just say the die is dead on him.
So my scale for judging OPs is like from the worst being like, where's the remote? I need to skip this like now. The middle is just like, all right, like I'll let it play, whatever. And then like, but there are some OPs where it's like, if you fucking touch skip, I will chop off your goddamn hand. Like, don't you dare.
Oh man.
I need to hear this every time.
Yeah, it's normally a great OP when I'm like, oh man, I hope Amelie or Nate Wants to Battle covers this just so I can have a version on my like Spotify.
Yes.
So that's me. But anyway, guys, it's been a hell of a lot of fun. We'll be back next week, of course, with a new topic and everything. But we'll be back with more about spring anime at the end of spring, where we're going to come back and talk about just what we ended up finishing, what we ended up getting really into. If there's a show that came in that you love more, it's going to be a little more freeform than this. This was the six shows we had to watch, so we definitely made sure we watched some spring anime, and then we'll come back later with the ones that we ended up watching, like how I'm gonna somehow make Sharif watch Miss Negatoro because it is the most suited show on the planet.
And how I'm gonna make all of you watch Odd Taxi.
You and Odd Taxi, I swear.
But we're gonna get to all of that on another week. So guys, in case you didn't know, this has been the Super Otaku Show. You can find us wherever podcasts are sold, including Pandora now. We're on Pandora, aren't we cool?
What?
Yeah, which is, I don't know.
I don't know how that works.
We got a big email like 3 days ago being like, you're on Pandora now. I was like, cool, thank you.
GG, cool.
You can also hit us up on Twitter at SuperOtakuShow1, and you can find us on Twitch at twitch.tv/RomanBearStreams, because that's me and Aaron doing other stuff. But anyway, guys, it's been a hell of a lot of fun. Keep watching anime, and until next time, so long.
Bye, guys.